Okay.
So, when did you start that study that you published in 54?
About 52.
Mm-hmm. And you have a pretty good sized sample, as I recall. From
600.
Yeah, reading in that. And this seems to be the beginning of...
606 to be...
Yes, right. This seems to be the beginning of a long life of your being famous about user studies. Was anyone else interested at that point?
Well, I'm trying to... Herb Menzel, remember him?
Right, uh-huh.
He was, from another viewpoint. And, I'm trying to relate these things. Of course, Belva Griffith was,
mm-hmm.
but that was quite a bit after.
Right, later on, yeah. Right.
Well, I had a big bibliography. There was an awful lot of discussion of methodology at the time.
Even in the early 50s, there were? Well, now, when I was looking at your bibliography, I counted over 20 articles and reports that were user studies in one form or another. You
yes.
kind of made a career out of user studies.
I did. Well, I used to, some of them that people asked me to do,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I just interested. Some people said I was a fanatic. Maybe Ralph Shaw.
Ralph Shaw said that to you?
That's funny. There's a funny story about Ralph Shaw. He introduced me through user study. He introduced me to my wife.
Oh, he did.
Who was doing studies. Remember, you know the name DJ Erhut?
Yes, right.
Your heart.
Uh-huh.
Well, my wife was working for him in England. And she was sent over here for various reasons. And and I was doing a study with Ralph Shaw at the U.S. Department of Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
Graduate mm-hmm. School of Agriculture, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to go and meet her and pump her, see what she has.
Now, I have her listed as cultural attaché at the embassy. No?
She was assistant scientific attaché.
Okay, maybe that's what it is then. All right.
Yeah.
Huh. And she was working for Urquhart in
England.
In England, huh?
Yeah.
Doing what kinds of work?
She was running what they called the... She was running an abstracting and indexing division.
For
the Department of Scientific and Industrial Research.
Okay. So what happened when you went and met her?
We were interviewing one another. She was pumping me and I was pumping her. And we started, it became a banter.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it, we were going out. And before you know it, we decided to get married.
Yeah. Now, how long a period of time elapsed between these two?
Oh. About a year.
Oh, yeah?
Mm. So,
was she doing studies here in the U.S. on with Urquhart, or continuing with the British Embassy?
Her job was to make sure that the British scientific community was aware of what of developments in information science or any kind of science. And she used to facilitate visits, like what some of the big scientists would come over, and she would make sure that they got to see the right people. I remember one night, shortly after we were married, she had a visit from somebody who was with this Hillary expedition. He was a physician. What was he investigating? He was investigating heat transfer. How do you get from 50 degrees below zero to room temperature, to body temperature? And he was studying all the mechanisms, how that works. I remember that. Smoking a great big cigar as he was talking, but I was helping to entertain him or keep him out of mischief or something.
Now, what was Mrs. Herner's background in the UK? What was her education?
She has an MS in physics.
Did she have any library training, and how did she get into working with her part?
No library training. She did abstracting and indexing, and she did it on her own. In other words, she was an abstractor for chemical abstracts.
Oh, she was a volunteer, huh?
Well, they paid her $2 a column.
Yeah.
I remember they paid her by.
Right.
And she was a translator also.
Well, that's right. She knew several languages.
She knew a lot. She knew. These are all self-taught. It's quite interesting that she'd get a textbook or something, and before you know it, she'd be doing it. She did French, which she just studied, German, Spanish, Russian. Actually, Russian she made money on. At what she handled for chemical abstract was all Russian.
Really?
Yeah. They only gave her Russian art. And she did Japanese. And she could speak them slightly, but she could read and write. It was great. So anyway,
she had an amazing facility for languages then, didn't she?
Yes, she did. I loved them.
Yeah. And so you all were married within a year of when you first met her. Did she continue working for the British Embassy?
For about 1958, when she joined the firm. We joined the firm together.
Yeah, right. Let's go back a little bit to the Johns Hopkins experience. Somewhere right around then, you began writing articles about special libraries management.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did this come out of your NYU experience and your Johns Hopkins experience?
I remember sitting here writing these things. And I was living in a room at the time in Silver Spring, and I was writing. I was sitting. I didn't have it. I don't know. When I look at these things, I think of how it was at your public library, and I remember I had joined the Special Library Association there for I was reading. Special libraries regularly, And I thought, you know, these articles are very good. Why don't I try my hand at writing a couple? And I remember the first thing was a selected reading list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a service I had developed at the Applied Conservatory. This was to alert basic scientists, the journal-based scientists, of interesting articles. Sort of presumptuous, because they knew a hell of a lot. They knew what journals. And I always had the idea that no matter how much they read, they couldn't possibly keep up. So maybe it'll help them with an occasional article. And it turned out that the most productive scientists did use this damn thing.
Hmm.
And it's ironic because the heaviest users of the literature were the heaviest users of my superficial service. And I thought, gee, I must be doing something good, so I'll write it down.
Uh-huh.
And then, in the course of talking to these guys, these pure and applied, mainly the pure scientists, because the other guys didn't talk to me because they used reports almost exclusively. And if you ask them, how do you find out about a useful report, it either gets routed to me, or somebody tells me about it. This is the report
mm-hmm.
user.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy.
Now these are for the AEC reports that are plugging your library?
No, well, and they a hell of a lot of others from the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamental guys, I remember I started interviewing sort of crudely. It started off, let me talk to them and see what they say. These are the basic scientists. So I almost started with a checklist, what tools you use, and gradually added this idea of the critical incident. The last time you went to get information, last couple of times, and how did you, what steps and what tools and what techniques did you use to get that piece of information? And then that I built up a set of tools that they might use, tools and techniques, and that's how I got my check on the critical incident.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the guys, I mean, Ralph Alpher, stories about him, but they don't concern me. I remember asking, well, which of these techniques do you use? You use the correct analog, you use calculators, what do you do? And he said, my main source of information about useful information is cited references. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, footnotes, bibliographies, and things I read. And so I add that to the list. And at that time, that's just about the time I met Garfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I was intrigued by... So I just wrote that up as part of my study. This is a way of getting information, cited references, and all the others, abstracting and indexing publications, reading lists, and so forth. And that's what I published originally. And that came out in the industrial and engineering chemistry, which doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was I presented that paper at a meeting. I was in Atlantic City, I think it was Atlantic City, at the American Chemical Society. And the American Chemical Society has and had a rule that all papers presented at their meetings are the property of the American Chemical Society. And if you want to publish that in any other publication, or not publish or whatever, you had to get their agreement, permission. And the meeting I spoke at the American Chemical Society was called Searching the Chemical Literature. That was a rubric.
This was part of the Division of Chemical Literature program.
That's right. Okay. Went on for years, searching the chemical literature. Mm-hmm. And I remember, did you ever hear the name Tibor Singer? I guess you did.
Yeah, uh-huh.
T-E-R Singer. Tibor, who I knew from the New York Public Library, he used to work there. In the very position that I occupied.
Is that right?
Before me. And he had an office across the street on Fifth Avenue, and he was doing translations. But he was the chairman of Searching the Chemical Literature, that session. And he did it for a number of years. And I remember giving my paper and his coming up to me aside and his name to me, and he had an exaggerated British accent, and he said, "Mr. Herder, aside from running 10 minutes overtime, what has this got to do with Searching the Chemical Literature?" And if you ask for a release of this paper, so a non-publishing release or whatever, I'll support it enthusiastically. So I asked for I didn't know what I was going to do, but so we asked for the release, and then I get a telephone call from guy named D.O. Myatt, who was the editor, who was the editor of Industrial Engineering Chemistry, saying, "Would you mind if I published it?" My God. I knew industrial chemistry. That's industrial and engineering chemistry. So that's how it happened to be published there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what year did you give the paper? Do you remember?
52.
Uh-huh.
Took about 2 years.
Yeah. I have a copy of the article in my file, because I'd seen it in your bibliography.
Yeah, had all kinds of drawings, and a friend of mine did illustrations.
Yeah. Well, now say a little bit more about the connection between you and Garfield. Were you at the 53 conference at Hopkins that the Welch Medical Library Project? You're what?
I say, I was sitting next to Gene.
Oh, you were. And he was the chair of that meeting.
He was the organizer, the chair, and so on.
Tell me about your reactions to that meeting and those.
Well, I was all excited at the time because, I didn't know. This was a mixture of all the societies. Mortal was there. Ralph Shaw was there. Was he the chairman? Werner Clapp was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of, I remember feeling very heady at the time. And the luminaries. And I gave Gene asked me to give a presentation of what I'm doing.
Oh, so you'd already started your, well, you said you'd started your study in 52 or something.
Yeah. Kicked off a lot of talk, discussion, and so forth. And I was all excited because they were asking me questions.
Yeah.
Some of which I couldn't answer, but I was all excited. So, that was just terrific. It was sort of, I remember Ralph Shaw saying to Gene, for Christ's sake, shut your mouth. They're trying to congratulate you.
He said that to Garfield?
Yeah. Because Gene was iterating and reiterating some point. He was trying to make it.
What was Garfield's reaction to that?
Well, he told me, he said he shut his mouth.
Now, Shaw was already pretty famous because of his
working
selector, huh? And running a big organization, too.
Internationally.
Yeah. That's right. He had been at the 48th conference in London.
That's right. The Royal Society.
Right.
And Erfurt was there. It was interesting. Talking about cited references.
Right, right.
Because I heard of all these guys, and it was quite exciting to meet them, because I met them through the Royal Society proceedings.
Who brought that book to your attention?
I think I was at, I remember being in New York at the Queens Public Library and just going through the shelves and seeing it, and seeing it.
And there it was.
And I looked at it, and I thought, oh, God, this thing's a gold mine.
Yeah.
But it also introduced me to the dean of the University of Chicago Law School at the time. And he introduced me to reference studies. And he was doing a reference study of the use of scientific literature.
Who was that? Wouldn't have been Wilson, would it?
No. Herman Fussler.
Oh, Fussler. Oh, right,
yeah. And that was exciting, too. Just the idea, and he all, who was this other guy that's got him in? Brown? Who did reference studies. I remember Ralph Shaw objecting to this guy.
Yeah. Now, you said that you had some role as to play, because you mentioned to Garfield about cited references being the Garfield. When was this that you pointed this out?
He and I have had many discussions about that. And I said, I've asked him numerous times, what attracted you to I claim, and this is a joking way, I don't know if I'm joking or not, that you got at least part of the idea for the citation index from the significance that I established of cited references. And I never got a clear response.
No, he didn't. I think in his writings, he's given credit mostly to someone else.
I know. No. I can tell you, because I was sitting with him at the time to the legal citation.
Right, to Shepherd's citation.
Shepherd's citation,
right, yeah.
Exactly. Because he spent a lot of time with the head of Shepherd's citation,
right, yeah.
Who was retired.
Right. Like, there's an article in American Documentation that this guy wrote, and before, I think, Dr. Garfield published his article in Science about it.
I think that...
But he credits someone else. It may be you that he's crediting in terms of original suggestion about it. I can't remember.
Could be.
I'll have to go back and double-check that.
Well, he has credited me on occasion when he got the Award of Merit. I don't know where he got this from. He was talking about all the influences of interfering. He said that I had the greatest influence on him. And I can't, like...
Well, it may have been this incident of
maybe talking about this.
Yeah. Well, now, tell me more about reactions to this 53 conference, because this was one of the early times when the machine stuff, punch cards, equipment was talked about.
Well, at that time, as a matter of fact, at that meeting, John Maltby, who is purported to be one of the inventors of the UNIVAC,
mm-hmm.
ENIAC, whatever you call it.
And then the UNIVAC.
Yeah. He was at the meeting. And various other, I remember Maltby ridiculing Mortel, who was making a philosophical, who was trying to establish a philosophical, logical, logician version of the rationale using Boolean terms and so forth, expressions of the unit term system. And I remember Maltby at that 53 meeting saying, do you use AC or DC electricity in the room in which you keep that box of cards, unit term cards? I remember Calvi saying, gee, I'm not quite sure.
Why was Maltby asking him this question?
He was being sarcastic.
Oh, I see.
He was trying to say you're making a hell of a lot more of this thing than there is.
Oh, I see.
Huh. And he explained that, and I have explained it at numerous meetings and discussion, that the thing that was exquisite about the unit term system was its simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can envelop it in all kinds of religious or philosophical or logical trappings, but the beauty was you could find things quickly, and it's very cheap,
mm-hmm.
and it also trained people in how Boolean algebra, in a rudimentary way, sort of works. You could do ands. You could do ors, and you could do nots. It's complex to do the nots
with mm-hmm.
negative. Logical sums, logical differences,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And I always thought that was pretty neat. And then, of course, when they added the Termitrex, this...
Mm-hmm. Was Taub making it overly complicated?
Yeah. Well, he used to write philosophical. He didn't think so. But he was a, as Harold...